I went on a little bit of a shopping spree this week, Brian.
Oh, cool. What'd you get?
I bought one of those huge new 60-inch LED 3D televisions.
Why would you get a 3D television?
Because it was the most expensive one there.
Okay, and I got to wear glasses every time you watch TV. What's the point? I don't get it.
I don't know. But it costs a lot of money, so thank you.
For telling you your new TV is stupid?
No, for buying my new television. What? Confused?
I think I'm missing something.
Well, there was this website. Uh-huh. I went there and your email address was listed. And I was like, okay. And then it had your Visa, you know, the Visa with the you know, the security code 6432.
Yeah, that is awesome. How'd you find this information exactly?
I was doing some Google searching, looking for, you know, stuff for this week's show. I was looking for Sony and
right.
PlayStation, and then this website just came.
PlayStation out. Network. Nice. Yeah. F you, Sony. I had to cancel my credit card a couple days ago. I really appreciate it.
Yes. I didn't really do that, but I was trying to just...
Well, if you had, you wouldn't have done anything because I canceled it the day the news broke. What we're talking about is this last... PlayStation Network has been down for about a week, a little bit more than a week now.
A little longer.
And at first it went down. Everybody's like, oh, no, I can't play. I can't play Call of Duty. Bummer. And then it was like, oh, they're being attacked by a hacker. Then it was like, oh, no, look, they've had some stuff compromised. And then it was Sony said, oh, this stuff was compromised. Change your passwords. But credit card information wasn't taken. And now 2.2 million users have had their credit card information compromised because Sony sucks.
One of the things given away also was usernames. I mean, not usernames, just email addresses and corresponding passwords, too. I heard about that also, aside from the credit card info. So, like, used your username and your normal password for stuff.
You're
screwed,
floating
out there for somebody to grab. Yeah. I mean, there wasn't a website that had it.
Yeah, exactly. But
I was exaggerating.
What was annoying to me, it took them a week to go and make any statement about it. And granted, I guess they wanted to go and figure out what exactly got compromised. But they haven't even exactly said that, yes, that stuff was taken. They said we suspect it could have been taken.
Right.
But apparently people are shopping that information around already for
absolutely.
Like, I mean, for like, I think $200,000 or $100,000. And it's like, I mean, give me a break, guys. Like, you can't go and do that. And I used to be an Xbox person, right?
Right.
And I switched to a PS3, but like, screw them. Like, I'm never going to give them, I'll never sign into their network again. I'll never trust them again. Like, I'm going to know how much damage they did to that
brand. When did you get an email from Sony?
Maybe 2 days ago.
Really?
Actually, you know what? I can't remember if I actually have even gotten an email from Sony.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, I read about it obviously, you know, last week when all this stuff was happening, but in terms of, you know, hearing from the company, like, I don't know that I actually even have. I'm sure.
Because I think.
I got to think I had.
I think our friend Jamie, he said he got.
Actually, no,
email.
I did get one because I didn't know what email I had used to log in or what ID I had. So I was trying to find out if I needed to change passwords and whatnot. And there was no easy way to go and find that information out, by the way. You know, if you didn't remember what your password was, you can't log into the network to find out what you actually need to change.
Right.
If you know, because like some, like I, like a lot of people, I'm sure, use about four or five different passwords and I like, kind of like rotate them around to various things.
Yeah, as do I.
Yeah. So if you don't remember one, you can kind of, you know, find the right
one. It's like in the similar vein of the password.
Or you can try the different ones and you can get in without locking yourself out.
Where was my brain 3 years ago?
Exactly.
When I created, what was I liking?
Yeah, because you don't want to have 10, because if you go and have like six failed attempts, they'll lock you out of your account. So you have to have a smaller number.
Right.
But
this
yeah.
has been a fiasco. I mean, a huge, huge fiasco. I mean, really, really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think, you know, some people may not realize just how bad this is, but this is as bad as it gets when information gets compromised.
Well, I think the problem is, too, nobody really knew what would happen. They've been trying to downplay it, and it's not going to be a problem until people's information starts getting used, and that's going to be a disaster.
Right.
Because this story is going to have legs. It's not going to simply go away.
Oh, yeah. This is not going
away. This is kind of like they can go and try to make this quiet now, but when people start saying, oh, hey, wait a second, I actually did have, you know, some, you know, somebody go and charge a stupid 3D 60-inch TV. Come on.
Right,
would you really buy one of those in real life? Really?
No.
Okay.
No, I would not buy a 3D TV.
I'm like, that's the ridiculous.
But I was trying to think of the most expensive piece of consumer electronics that I could like go to Best Buy and actually buy.
You could buy a fancy fridge.
That's true. That's not really consumer electronics, although there are smart fridges out there these days.
Yeah. Well, there's electronics in everything right now.
Yeah, that's true.
But what are you going to do? But yeah, I think those TVs are terrible. But I think it's, you know, it's one thing to go and have like your passwords compromised at hack happened with, you know, Gawker Media a couple months
right,
ago. It's
right.
another thing to go and have that kind of sensitive information, you know, come out, especially right now when we're in a time where there's been so much press attention about privacy and whatnot with the location tracking stuff and all that kind of thing. It's really, really, it's terrible timing for them. And The damage to the brand, I don't think, can be underestimated, because I think this is just the beginning. It's going to get worse.
Well, I think, yeah, I think it's like right now, it doesn't seem like people get.
Sure, it's just kind of like out there, but like, yeah, it just seems like one yet another random.
Especially the average just PlayStation user that just doesn't really see the bigger picture that's happening. So we're educating you people. This is bad. This is very bad.
Yeah, this is no bueno.
Yeah. No.
Anyway, on that note, it is April 30th. Welcome to Tech Bacon. I'm Brian.
I'm Scott.
And we're happy to be here with you guys today. Thanks for joining us. If you're hitting us live on Ustream, we appreciate it. Please join the chat. And
if you're not live on Ustream next week,
please do. Saturdays at 11. We broadcast every Saturday at 11.
So first on the agenda today, sir, what do you think?
Well, we discussed the Sony thing, and as a follow up on that privacy tip, last week we had talked about Apple and the whole location tracking thing, and what was going on with that. Apple released a statement on Wednesday, and also Steve Jobs did an interview with All Things Digital, basically talking about this stuff, and they kind of clarified what exactly had been going on and what that file was and everything. And so we were to go and update you guys that, because there was some stuff that we said that wasn't quite spot on,
right?
Although it was close, but there's things that they had illuminated for people. There are two things that are basically going on with this topic. There's the topic of the issue of what's getting sent to Apple, and also what was that file consolidated.db that was on iPhones that those researchers found, and then and it seemed to have your location stuff tracked. In terms of what's being sent to Apple, like any cell phone company or smartphone really, OS, they basically go and send – your phone will go and send encrypted and, as we said last week, anonymized location data to them basically. So
tied to a name or a phone number or anything.
Or an IMEI. Contextual, context-free data that basically says in this particular area there are these Wi-Fi networks and these 3G towers.
And people are doing this. I mean, there's no – what person is doing what.
Correct. It's just like in this location, in this area. Well, it's not even people are doing these things. I think it's just like in this location, there are these 3G towers and Wi-Fi towers.
Yes.
And the reason they do that is because basically Apple needs to go and have a database to know I'm backing up a second. Back in the olden days, there was a company called Skyhook. And Skyhook is who Apple used to kind of go and, speed up the service for trying to go and find out your location if you, A, didn't have a phone with GPS, or if you want to do a faster, location search. Because a true GPS lock takes about 2 or 3 minutes.
And the iPhones have always, without GPS, have always been very good with getting a close proximity to where you are.
Correct. And the way they did that was basically they said they looked at they basically scanned the area that you were at and looked at which 3G, cell phone towers and which Wi-Fi networks were nearby. And they kind of said, okay, cool. We have a big database that's, has all those things mapped out across the country or the world really. And so we know what's where. Now that's the way, Skyhook was a company that basically drove around in trucks and just, scanned stuff, much like Google does when they're doing, Street View stuff. They're doing that same thing. There's all that, noise where they got, people got mad in Germany because they had been going and scanning, local Wi-Fi networks to know what was where. And that's how that stuff happens. There's these databases out there that companies have to kind of, basically help to triangulate you faster. So when you go and hit, location on your phone, instead of taking 3 minutes, it can happen in 15 seconds.
Exactly.
It's basically assisted GPS. Now, Apple a couple years ago, Apple doesn't like to go and use third-party stuff because then they're beholden to that. So they said, Skyhook, we're not going to use you anymore. We have, tens of million devices in the field. We're going to build our own crowdsourced location database. Basically. So that's what they've been doing for several years now. Basically been collecting all this information. Once again, encrypted, anonymous. And so basically they can go and figure out now, based on the cell phone towers and the Wi-Fi networks where you're at. And so that's what they go and send. They basically send that anonymous data. Now what the iPhone does when it basically tries to figure that out, it has to go and contact, the cloud, has to contact Apple and, get a part of that database to know, what's there. And that is basically what had happened. That's what that consolidated DB file that people got upset about. It wasn't true location tracking. It was basically a cache of the
locations.
Of the cell phone networks and 3G towers that were in various areas you were at. So basically, so it knew at that time it could say, okay, cool, we kept that here on board the phone so it didn't have to contact Apple for quicker access and whatnot.
Yeah, basically to perform phone functions, in location, you know,
correct,
quicker.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
A better user experience.
Yeah, so it's not technically a list of where you were at. It's a list of, you know,
cell towers
and fiber networks, that places you've been at. So you can theoretically use it to go and track you, but it's not. They weren't specifically tracking people.
Yeah.
And the problem is, and also this file, we'd said last week, I was incorrect, that it was openly available on the phone. That's not the case.
It's just actually, on your computer.
Correct. The file was on your phone, but it was sandboxed.
Right.
It wasn't encrypted, which they are doing now, I believe.
But if you found the phone, it wasn't.
Yeah,
just
unless
like you could grab that file.
Unless you jailbroke the phone and that kind of thing. Right. And the only problem was like that file had gotten backed up, you know, unprotected to people's computers.
That was the biggest
right.
danger. You know,
correct.
It's just this unencrypted file living on your machine.
Yeah. And the truth is, if you look at this issue, it becomes even more of a non-issue because the only real vector where somebody could go and attack you and even compromise your data is if, A, they stole your phone and, you know, and jailbroke it, or they stole your computer and had access to that. And in any of those cases –
you got bigger problems.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of interesting how the story got blown up so huge,
well,
so
you know,
quickly.
You know what happened though? And Apple does this. Other companies do it too. And I think partially Sony, like this goes back to everything, is when something like this happens, say something right away. The longer you wait, the longer the speculation and the rumors
right.
and the media is just going to jump on it and speculate and think and come up with ideas that make no sense. But once they're out there in the world, it just makes it worse than it actually was.
And it's hard with these kind of issues too. Amazon did the same thing. It took them, I think, until a couple days ago to actually say what happened when all their services went down, which we talked about last week. At a certain point, you want to go and have you want to have the information about what happened so you can say specifically what this was. And obviously that's going to take time. It's not like Steve Jobs knows every single minute facet of
absolutely.
The file system of the iPhone.
But just, you know, acknowledge something happened and say we're working to figure out exactly what.
Yeah, it is.
You know, like say something. Saying nothing is always going to be worse.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's very much of an old guard kind of mentality. It's like, you know, don't say anything, then come out with your press release and then kind of say something. Where today,
well,
you know, we're in a social media world.
Toyota.
Yeah.
Did with their cars.
Yeah.
You know?
And today in a social media world, it's almost better to come out right away and keep that dialogue going. Even if you give out, you know, incorrect information or even if it's just to apologize, just people know that you're present and aware instead of pushing it off because at this point people expect constant communication and saying nothing.
And the speed at which this communication comes at us nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just you can't contain it. And so these rumors and, you know, ideas get into the social consciousness way faster than if somebody had to read it in the newspaper in the next day or 2 days later or something.
Definitely.
It ends up on Twitter and then it ends up in your Facebook and it ends up – I mean it's like –
yeah, and everything moves so quickly. It's almost if you don't say anything, that becomes a conspicuous absence.
Right.
Whereas before it just became, oh, they're figuring stuff out. Now it's become like, oh, they're not saying something. There must be a reason why they're not saying anything.
Exactly.
You know, and Apple kind of gets away with it because that's always their thing. But still, it's, you know, that kind of stuff. There were a few days of stories that didn't need to go out there necessarily. I appreciated the way they came out with it and kind of explained it so specifically. But at that point,
totally.
I mean, if we're
all this stuff was already out there. And I mean, the average Joe is not going to – I mean, a week later, they're really not going to be getting the follow-up.
Yeah.
They're only going to have heard the rumors and lose interest and move on to something else.
Yeah.
And damage is done.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. I do wonder – I don't – they seem to be pretty Teflon when it comes to, you know, damage to their brand.
Not going to hurt at the end of the day. In long run.
I can, and anything, it's kind of interesting. It feels like they're kind of taking this leadership position. I guess both Apple and Google are going to testify to Congress because, of course, a bunch of, you know, Al Franken and other people kind of said like, oh, we have to have hearings about this and discuss it.
Ridiculous.
I mean, which I appreciate because there is a lot of stuff that's not kind of, that people aren't aware of.
Sure,
But
I mean, there
time,
has to be some level of transparency, but.
Yeah, I'm also with you. It's just like anytime a politician jumps on a hot button issue, they know they're going to get pressed. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, please. Call me cynical, but come on.
No, but it happens.
Yeah, and I like Al Franken because he's funny, but come on.
Totally.
But yeah, so that was an interesting follow-up to it. But yeah, so no, Apple's not tracking you. No, your stuff's not, you know, being terrible. They're going to release
you're basically tracking yourself.
Yeah, and they're going to release a software update in the coming weeks to basically encrypt that
file
on the phone. So, you know, if somebody jailbreaks, it's going to be hard for them to get it. And also make it so that file is not backed up on your computer. And also the file itself is only going to go and store 7 days worth of data. And I have to say, I'm annoyed that they're not going to back it up on the computer anymore. Because
if you go through the same places, I guess it's like losing your cache on your web browser. It's a little annoying
for the first day. But if every time you back up your phone or restore, it's going to have to do that. It's like that isn't that's something that would, you know, the user is going to take a slight hit because of a lot of press drama. That doesn't need to happen.
Probably true.
Which is a shame. But,
probably,
you know.
True. Because if it was backed up on the computer and encrypted, then who cares?
Yeah. But you're right. It's probably better just for the PR thing. And also one thing they talked about, they hinted, they said they're also, people said, you know, what information are they collecting? They said, oh, we're doing like this network, you know, database. We're also collecting information for a traffic database.
Yes. That was a little, and everyone's like,
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Exactly. So apparently Apple is going to be, I'm guessing the conclusion is A, they're going to replace Google Maps and they're going to have their own traffic service on the phone.
And it's
going to
be a crowdsourcing.
Yeah. Which Google's also doing now.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. But that's kind of cool. I mean, also I think it's smart of them too, because they don't want to basically get caught with their pants down. People say, oh, you're collecting this information now and not say anything. Apple doesn't pre-announce products.
No. Ever. Of course. Oh, of course not.
Especially if it's like years out, which this thing sounded like.
Yeah. It's not anything right away.
Yeah. But it's cool that they thought that, you know, that they, I like that they're being straight up about this enough to do that. And to give them credit, they have always been leaders, I think, in terms of, you know, location, privacy, that kind of stuff. They were the first company to ever kind of, you know, ask the user if you want to have permission to go and look at, you know, have this, you know, application track your stuff.
Right.
All the other operating systems were just doing it. And Apple kind of said, no, maybe it's a pain because you have to hit okay every time you launch a new app, but we're going to make sure that you know that's happening.
Correct.
Which is cool, I think, on their part.
Yeah, definitely. And we're going to move on to something else, but when we were talking earlier, we forgot to bring this up, and I just want to mention it. We don't have to go into a whole discussion, but iCloud.
Oh, yes.
I just wanted to bring it up, but you know, this company had the domain iCloud. It's been confirmed that Apple has bought the name iCloud, mm-hmm. and I'm pretty sure it was confirmed the other day that they're actually internally testing a system called iCloud.
Correct.
And so it's going to be coming.
And it's going to be not only a music locker like we've been talking about, it's also going to include video and phones and everything. I mean, excuse me, photos. Yeah. Very, very cool. And once again, I wasn't right this week. It didn't come out this week.
But it's soon. It's soon. Coming.
I think it's going to come in June. I think they're going to announce it at WWDC and it's going to go live.
I feel like they're not going to do a new phone announcement this summer. They're going to do this. Maybe a revised iPod. I don't know. And then they'll do the phone in the fall.
Yeah. I think they're going to pre-announce iOS 5.
Yeah.
I think iCloud will go live in June is my guess.
I think that's
And then the full, you know, what all the other services will come out. But I think this is going to be, I mean,
it's going to be big.
It's going to be very, very big.
I'm very excited to see what it is.
It's interesting because I use the Amazon thing every day at work and it's better, but still there are certain ways in which it's annoying to use, and they get more and more annoying every day I have to use it. Like just the simple fact that you can't go and look at all your albums by name. You have to look at them by icon. So it takes 10 minutes to scroll through stuff practically. It seems like it's small touches like that. You know, you really appreciate it when a company is really UI driven.
Yeah. Well, and if Apple does end up having a web-based
iTunes
player, is it going to be exactly the same as iTunes? It's going to be different.
I think it's exciting. Exactly, you know? The same thing, yeah. Well, or it'll look like the iPad version. I think it's one of the two.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very cool. I'm very.
But it's just the fact that that stuff was actually confirmed by the end of the week.
Yeah.
That they do have iCloud and they're testing it.
Yeah.
So big deal.
Yeah, it's going to be, once again, awesome year.
Yes.
And speaking of awesome year, this is going to have a special segment right now in store. Obviously, the iPad 2 came out earlier this year, and there's lots of new things coming out in the tablet space. So this segment's going to be called Tablet Watch 2011. basically, Scott and I had not played with – you played with the Zoom, right?
I had spent a little time with the Zoom.
Yeah, but we hadn't played with all the new tablets. So we went down to Best Buy and checked out the Playbook and the Zoom and what was the other one?
The Acer Icon –
Insignio,
something like that.
Some stupid
Acer
name.
Acer brand, you know, they were a low end computer brand, but they do have a name for themselves. I mean, in the computer market. They kind of have them all laid out now. They have the Galaxy Tab is there and all that stuff, you know, just in general.
The Acer Iconia Tab A500.
There you go.
Which obviously you can see why that just stuck in our memory and just rolled off the tongue so easily.
Yes, because it's just so easy to say.
Yeah. I'm very excited about the Tab A500. I think the A550 and the A565 will also be quite sexy.
Right. Me too.
Yeah. Great naming conventions, guys. Good job. Anyway, well, why don't we start off? What were your thoughts on everything?
It was cool to have them all kind of out to see at the same time,
definitely,
because you could compare the different ones. I still like the Zoom. It was my first impressions were the same. I did do when I first tried it. They didn't have Flash out for it yet, so I gave a couple of sites a test just to see the power behind the device. It's a powerful device.
Sure. I mean,
that thing's got speed to it. You know, I went to the Amazon site and I played stuff from my movie library right on the thing, full screen, no hiccups. I didn't go HD because the Wi-Fi signal there was pretty slow.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty cool. I still like the Zoom. I like the feel of it. I don't know if you noticed this on the web browser. There is if you put your thumb or your finger on the side of the browser, this little icon comes up that's like around, like in the shape of your fingertip, and there's back, forward, home, left, right. It's kind of like it's very futuristic. You just touch it and this thing appears around your finger. Mm-hmm. And then you can navigate the browser. Oh, something I hadn't noticed that before. I haven't even heard anything about that. It's a very, very neat thing. I love having, to me, one of the biggest things on these Android tablets is the full Chrome, having that tab browsing and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they do that really well. That Acer, it was fine. It felt a little cheap. You know, it seemed a little – the build seemed not as nice, you know, as far as I can tell. You know, the OS obviously is the OS, is the Honeycomb. And Honeycomb, I have a little bit of issues with. It takes a little to get used to. It's obviously, not as user-friendly as the iPad. And that's just typical with Apple against any other product, really, you know. What did you think of those?
I had not played with any of the tablets beforehand. I played with the Playbook, the Zoom, and the – Insignio, the A5 – I'm just going to call it the A500 because that's actually easy
Acer.
To remember.
Just call it the Acer.
Acer. But I'm going to say Acer, whatever. Acer, but whatever. And I have an iPad and I play with the iPad 2 quite a bit as well. You're not going to be surprised here, but I'm going to be – I debated whether I should go and try to give an objective opinion or I should just go and give my personal opinion because, you know, what we're not really like a review site. We're like an opinion show, right?
Right, yeah.
And to be honest, I thought they were all kind of terrible.
Really?
For different reasons, though. Different reasons.
Okay.
Playbook, I thought the hardware was great.
Wait, let's hold on Playbook for a second.
Well, no, I want to –
Because I – well, okay, go ahead. Yeah, all right.
Okay, because I'm going to compare it because I basically – okay. I thought the Playbook the hardware was wonderful. Like it felt good in your hand. I like this. There's this rubber backing to it that feels great. I don't buy the 7-inch size. I don't see the utility of it. But in terms of like the quality and the build of the device itself, I thought it was really nice. It's thin. It feels good in your hand. It's great. Hardware-wise, both the Zoom and the Acer. It reminded me of going back and using like my aunt or uncle's, you know, laptop from like, you know, 2004. This felt thick and bulky and clunky. Hmm. I thought it was ugly.
Wow.
Basically, like to me, it's like all the whole idea of the tablet thing is it's going to be something like, you know, in your device that feels good in your hand. It's got to feel great in your hand. And, you know, and like that to me means thin. That to me means, you know, aesthetically pretty. That to me means, you know what I mean? All those kind of things.
I mean, I thought that when I put them next to each other, the Acer was thicker than the Zoom.
Right.
I didn't like the Acer, but the feel of the Zoom to me felt like a high quality piece of machinery.
They all felt plasticky to me. The Acer much more so, but I think the thickness of it to me was such an incredible turnoff. It like immediately made me not want to use the device because I'm used to using the iPad, which is thin, and the iPad 2 is even thinner than that.
Right.
Obviously the iPad devices blow those away in terms of thinness. The BlackBerry is comparable. The BlackBerry had the same kind of feel, and I think that's the important feel in your hands. If you want to go and you want it to feel more like you're holding a magazine, not like you're holding a book.
Sure.
For me was a big problem. There wasn't a big weight problem I ran into. But I think that's almost why it felt cheap to me because it was like thick, but it wasn't that heavy.
Interesting.
You know, because I don't think they're that heavier, heavier compared to the iPad.
Pretty much the same.
Yeah.
I thought the on the other hand, I think there's something very much to the 7-inch. Let me rephrase that. I think the 7-inch is actually too small, but right. I think an in between the 7 and 10 would be the perfect size. See, because holding that 7-inch, like holding it in one hand, it really has a different feel and usability than using the bigger tablet. I think there's room for both, but I almost feel like that 7-inch Playbook size, if the screen was actually more towards the edge, so the screen was actually bigger.
Right.
Because I think that whole thing is actually not 7 inches. It's got to be 8 or 9.
You know, hold on.
Because
keep going. I'm going to check.
Because that outside edge is about an inch on either diagonal. You know what I mean?
Right.
So to me, holding that was a great feel. It just felt right in my hands.
I think it really felt
right.
I think it felt right because it was thin, because of the feel of the device, not because of the size.
I think
because the screen itself is like freaking tiny.
It's tiny.
If that's 7 inches,
and it bothers me.
There seems no point to it other than using, you know, a phone or if you're an Android guy, than using like one of those, you know, big honking
phones.
That's
what I felt on the screen size. But the device – and like I held the Tab also, which is a 7-inch tablet also.
And that has a smaller bezel.
A little bit. Yeah. I put them next to each other and like tried to line up the bezel. It's barely different. It's pretty much the same thing. And it just, to me, that holding that size just for some reason felt really good and natural. And it was just, you know, it just felt good. And maybe it was a lightness thing. I'm not sure, but it really just felt easy to hold.
Okay, it's 7.6 inches wide. So it's not even like a diagonal. So the size, everything is screwed up. The screen itself has got to be super tiny.
Yeah, it's got to be 5 inches or something.
It's actually
like
it's a 7-inch LCD display.
Oh, so it's seven, but the diagonal is, I think it's like 2 inches of on each side. So it's got to be like 9.
Well, you know, because it's 7 inches wide, so diagonal is going to be a lot less. Although it's going to be more.
The 7-inch. Oh, 7 inches wide. So
the screen is a 7-inch screen, which is going to be diagonal. So I'm sure, like, you know.
So the screen is 7 inches, but the actual diagonal is probably about 9 from corner to corner.
Probably less than that, something. It's been a long time. What is it? A squared plus B squared equals C squared. Right? We haven't done that.
But
in
if
a
you
while.
Take that, if you take that form to me, if you take that size and expand the screen to the outer edge, which they're going to be able to do soon. I like that size,
here's a couple of problems with that. I thought it felt too small.
Holding it or the screen,
the feel of it. I love the feel of it in terms of like the thinness, and it felt like the right size. It felt like the right thinness and weight.
Okay,
but in terms of like, and I'm sitting here and I go, okay, cool. What can this do? You know, what's the utility of this size? And it felt small, I think, because it's a cramped screen. Even if it's a bit, first of all, you need a bezel. You need a bezel to kind of have a tablet device to have something to hold on to, so you're not interacting with the device.
Right, but you don't need that. That's a thick bezel on there.
Well, that's because
they put
a lot of gestures into it. But ultimately, it's not that much thicker comparatively. It's thicker than like, you know, an iPad's is.
Okay, but
let's gestures.
Put it this way: it's probably that thick, but on a screen half, you know, 3 inches less.
I think it's actually thicker than the iPad's in a screen
bezel,
less. Yeah,
yeah. So,
that's part of their whole.
It made the screen feel tiny.
It did make this. You're right. It did, very much so. But I think the size wise, I go, what am I going to use this for? Because here's the thing, like I have a phone, like the iPhone is like a smaller screen compared to like certain Android phones, but you have like, there's a bunch of stuff you can do with that. And obviously the iPad is basically, you know, roughly the size of a piece of paper, you know, in portrait mode. So it's like, there's different usage scenarios with those kind of things because they're much different sizes. That in between, I don't know if feels to me like it's not big enough to offer any benefits other, you know, above the phone really, but it's too small to go and like open up and really do word processing on it. I think it's an in between size. I don't know if there's a point to it except for web browsing and watching video.
But honestly, I think word processing
that's strictly as a content consumption thing. That's, you can't do anything else with that size in my opinion.
Okay.
At least not handily.
I didn't feel that way, but I did feel that this like on screen size of that device made no sense to me.
Yeah.
Now, what about the current?
Did the tab make sense to you size wise?
The feel, same thing. The feel, yeah. Like it feels almost exactly like holding a Kindle to me, which I assume they're similar in dimension. I'm not exactly sure, but it just, and at the end of the day. Let's say the next iPad comes out and it's as light as one of those devices. That may be the perfect thing.
Because
holding it in one hand so simple and easy, but I think it's a weight issue. I really do.
What is the weight of the – I don't know that the iPad 2 is heavier than the Playbook though.
I think they're comparable. It's got to be. And even not by much, even if you're talking a very little, I felt noticeable because I was playing with the iPad 2 at the Best Buy also. Before we go to the...
Wait, hold on one second. I'll check this.
You're looking up the dimensions?
I'm looking up the weight, yeah. 7-inch screen on the Playbook. Obviously, 9.7-inch screen on the iPad 2.
Right. But does it say weight difference?
Playbook is 4... Okay, I'm looking at the UK site. Playbook is 400 grams. The iPad is 613 grams. Okay, so it is. You're right. It is heavier.
Yeah, there's...
So,
I mean, if you take... And it maybe that's what I was feeling. Because just holding it was so just easy and natural. And so if you take that weight and put it into the bigger screen, which eventually will be able to be done.
Sure.
Maybe that's the sweet spot for me.
Yeah.
As far as size of device.
Yeah. Because to me, it all comes down to – and also maybe this is versus, you know, like knowing what stuff I already do, you know, daily on an iPad versus a different device. That screen was so cramped to me.
That screen was so cramped. I agree.
And on all of them. Not all of them, but like all those smaller devices like that. Anything less than 9.7 to me seems like it's not enough.
Use your phone?
You're in an airplane. You need to stretch your legs. That's like the mental thing that kept coming back to me.
When I was working on the Playbook, I thought that same thing. I totally thought that same thing. What did you think of the OS on the the
Android and Honeycomb tablets.
I'm curious.
And once again, we're going to differ on this wildly. I found it. I don't, there's no way to go and say it, because like I go through this stuff and I try to go keep an open mind and kind of just explore this. But the way I approach it is I pretend I don't know anything about the device, mm-hmm. you know, because I think mm-hmm. the only benefit that post-PC or tablet or whatever you want to call it, all these devices, you have to approach them like saying, why would I use this instead of the computer or the laptop I already have? Like that, and that's the way I try to approach all of these things, because people already have those things. So it's – already have, you know, computers or desktops. So it's like, what benefit does this thing offer above what they already have? Like, 'cause that's what's going to encourage them to go and to, you know, to buy it versus, you know,
right.
you know, change how the way they use stuff, right? I think it's just confusing. I think it's neat and shiny and looks like Tron, and that's cool. And it's got all kinds of like, you know, neat whiz bang buttons everywhere. It's inconsistent. The UI is a mess. It's not clear how anything works. You go and hit a button on top to go to apps and it shows up apps, and then you can't go and hit that same button to get out of that screen. You have to go and realize that you have to hit the home button at the bottom to go and do it. There's no consistency. The widget thing is a neat idea, but the implementation, it just becomes a crazy mess. Like,
no,
it's neat.
I mean, I use widgets on my phone on almost every screen. The widgets, they're amazing.
I appreciate
them. I constantly use them.
I appreciate that. I don't really think that – to me, it's – there's a sweet spot between letting people do anything and having a device that enables people to do something like in a super efficient way.
But the widgets are not anything. There's only certain apps that use widgets.
But like I had – like the one I was looking at had basically, you know, thumbnails of like – I guess it was a shortcut widget to the web browser, and it had like these six different, you know – there are two different ones, and they're basically, you know, like six or eight thumbnails of different like web pages,
right.
and you could scroll through it. And it's just like, it's just crazy. Like I'm sitting here and like this, I have to go and read an instruction manual to figure out how to use this thing.
I agree.
And
with
that to me, that sucks. I mean, that straight up sucks to
but
me.
But here's the thing. No other computer device or ever has ever been as intuitive as an Apple device in any consumer electronics. I'm going to go throw that period.
But I could.
So
I mean, you could argue. I think you could argue though that like you know, Windows 7 is intuitive as OS X.
No, it's more intuitive than previous Windows, but it's not as any idiot can step up to a Mac and use it right off the bat.
Right,
and that's a good thing. But on other PC or other devices, that's not the case. And so for me, just because it's not that, and you have to take the time to learn it, does not make it a worse device.
I disagree. Why is it okay?
I don't think it has to be that intuitive.
Why is it okay that it's designed so terribly that you need to go and read an instruction manual to do
it's
it? Why do you have
designed
to
designed terribly?
Why do you, no,
it's
it
just
is,
that you're,
that's,
once
that's,
you're familiar with it, no. Because once
you
you're familiar
have to
with
do
it,
homework to use a recreational computer device.
You have to do homework to use your TiVo or your DVR. Or your,
and you shouldn't.
I mean,
and that's a big problem. Don't you agree? Shouldn't UI be simpler and more efficient and get out of the way of the user?
Sometimes.
UI should not get in the way of what I'm trying to do work. I should be able to do my work and not.
Like,
I should not have to go and figure
out.
But
not right off the bat. Once you know it, it's not in the way anymore.
But you shouldn't have to do that at all.
You shouldn't have to learn something? Why not?
Correct.
Why not?
If I have to learn something, I'll just keep using the computer I already use. Seriously. I mean, in my opinion, takes away the incentive. And I think sales are reflecting that.
I think you can't talk about sales yet for any other devices.
I disagree.
No.
Because here's the thing. If they were great and if they were wonderful and the software was fantastic.
No, they're still not Apple. It doesn't matter.
But no, that's not the case. I mean, everybody likes to say that as an excuse,
no,
like saying, our product
true.
Isn't designed as well.
It's not.
And it doesn't, but that's okay because the reason it's taking off is because it's Apple. I disagree.
If there's
a device
Android
that was great.
You're going to, I mean, it's,
well,
you're going to see the same thing.
We won't. We'll get to this in a second. I don't think we will. If a device was out there that was fantastic, that was well built, that had a great OS that people could take too easily, it would go and still – people would still use it. I mean it would take off no matter what.
But that's like saying back in the day when there was the Walkman and that was what people used for their music, right?
Right.
There were Panasonic-made portable cassette players. Toshiba made portable cassette players. But people bought Walkmans because they were the Walkman. And they were better also. But they bought the Walkman because it was the Walkman. And it wasn't because there wasn't a Toshiba one that was better. And the Discman, same thing. Nobody was able to crack that market. It's just because it's become a brand name that you associate with quality and innovation, and you want the new Apple product.
So isn't the goal then of other manufacturers to go and make a product that's better?
Yeah, and they're trying.
But they're not. I don't think
any of these have been better yet.
They're releasing this stuff that's half – like I said, their goal is to go and compete with that then. Let's assume that that's the case. Obviously, the brand is a huge help. But I think if the iPad wasn't intuitive, it wouldn't sell. But it was early adopters. The early adopters would go like me, would go and buy it because we liked new stuff.
It was just like having your iPhone or iPod Touch bigger. It was the same exact UI. They did anything different.
Well, they added new elements and stuff. But
a little bit.
But they go and they – I mean, it was a very
smart – they built off the same thing.
And obviously, it was a very smart strategy because the iPad idea came first and then the iPhone came later. So they were obviously working towards the iPad, I think, for the last – you know, since 2007. Absolutely. And, you know, training the market.
And Apple does that. They really work their products till they come out with something super amazing. No other company does that.
So once again, I say
– just not how these companies work.
So, but I think you're arguing against your own point. You're basically saying these other devices aren't as good. They aren't trying as hard. They aren't trying to make them better.
Well, I think they're trying.
And that's okay.
But they release interim products. Apple doesn't. That's what I think. I think the way these companies work philosophically is different. No, not necessarily. But I think it's different. And it doesn't mean – there may be four Zooms, let's say, quote unquote, before it is the quality of the iPad, right? In Apple's case, they wouldn't release those four. They would wait years and years to get into the game and then come out with something amazing. Other companies don't work that way. Whether that's good or bad, that's just not what they do.
Correct.
You know, and I don't think that means it's necessarily worse or better. Business-wise, I don't know. Because maybe business-wise for them, it's better. Maybe there is some way that they're looking at the way their sales
Better for like Motorola or better for Apple?
No, better for Motorola.
Gotcha.
In the way that they do the releasing. And, you know, just maybe because of the size of the company or the way that they work with their partners. I don't know.
I mean, to be honest, I think
it's just a different philosophy.
I think you can look at
Different business philosophy.
It is. It actually is. And that actually leads to the next thing I want to talk about. I mean, just to close this point up, I don't think – if you have to go and like read – if you're saying automatically at the top it's not as good, they release inferior products and you have to read a manual to get it, those to me are all part of the same problem. And basically they need to go and release products that are better. If they're just jumping out into the market just to kind of go and have something out there, that to me – it seems to me to be ridiculous. And that's why – I mean like I said, if the product – I think if it was as good – if it was comparable or better, I think it would work. If the iPad was poor, it wouldn't sell. All those things I think are true. And I think they need to go and create something that's better than – and they're not, I don't think.
No, they're not. Well, and nobody has created something that's better than the iPod in 10 years.
Yeah.
People have tried, but nothing anywhere close.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Yeah.
You know, they just – they're – Apple is good at it. I give them that, but I don't think that discounts other people getting into the game.
Well, I think other people should absolutely get into the game. I mean, competition drives the market forward. It drives Apple forward. It's part of the reason why I think iOS 5 is going to be kick ass this year is
because of the Android competition.
Yeah, because there's so much pressure. Yeah. Sure. But I think you mentioned earlier how you thought it's going to be like the phones with tablets. And by the way, guys, Scott and I used to get into conversations just like this one all the time. It's actually what made us think it'd be fun to start a podcast. We haven't had a big good one this on the show yet. This is awesome.
But wait, before we move on to that, can we talk about the Playbook OS for a second?
Oh, yes.
Because
we didn't
talk about that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about it. I somewhat liked the Playbook OS, which was a surprise to me. But I think I liked it because it so much reminded me of the Web OS.
Sure.
That Palm created and HP owns now.
Yeah.
And in turn made me excited for an HP tablet.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see how that happens.
Because
the
I don't
touchpad?
Know.
Is that supposed to be
the touchpad?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you had spent any time with like the Palm Pre or anything like that.
No, I never
but
did.
But I got to tell you, that OS, I mean, it was buggy and stuff. It had issues, but conceptually, that OS was brilliant.
Yeah.
And I can really see how it would work on a tablet. It's almost like it was made for that form.
Right.
And BlackBerry took some of the elements and, I mean, pretty much the same thing for their elements that they used. Just, I don't think, did it as well as WebOS and as well as WebOS is going to do. It was really weird navigating through that thing. Did you I couldn't
the
get
playbook?
To some things.
Once again, same problem. I couldn't figure out how to do anything. And once again, approaching it, like I said, that was my benchmark. I decided to kind of saying I knew that don't know anything about it.
Right.
I had no idea what was going on. Like eventually I found out that you can like swipe on the sides and that does some
stuff. I didn't
even
figure that out.
but once again, it's like.
But once I figured out some stuff, it still was not easy. Let me put it that way. Even once I figured it out, it wasn't easy.
And there was some pinching stuff to get to the car view, but then it didn't work again.
That's like, what I'm saying. Like it didn't work all the time, right?
Yeah. And once again, I think companies do more damage to their brand in this space in particular, by releasing products that aren't ready to go, that aren't as good, or aren't even, not even better, not even equal, not even close. in terms of usability, I think they're damaging the brand, because all that's going to happen are people going to try it at a Best Buy and go like, I have no idea what's going on.
Well, and maybe that's why.
And then they'll go get an iPad, or they'll kind of see like, oh, the Playbook 2, like, oh, whatever. That kind of thing was confusing. I'm not going to try that again.
And maybe that's why Windows hasn't released one yet. Yeah, because they're not ready.
Well, I think we'll get to this later. I actually think Microsoft is in the best position to be number two in this market, above possibly. Everybody else.
Possibly. I am curious. I mean, one of the ones I didn't have was the Asus ePad, which I'm really curious to get my hands on.
Right.
Did you watch that video?
Yeah, yeah. That's the one that basically has the laptop dock and can kind of be both. Yeah.
Interesting. It was very interesting.
It's once again, it's the same thing as with the Motorola Atrix. It's like a neat trick. I don't know.
Well, but it's different than the Atrix. The Atrix actually puts a different overlay OS on the screen. It's not just your phone popped up on the screen.
Right.
So this is not changing the overlay of the tablet.
Yeah, but that to me, I think that's the problem for me. Because like, either you can use it as a mouse, but then you have to use touch events still.
It's just a cool dock. Here's my issue with the iPod keyboard dock, except that it has a mouse.
Well, that's the mouse thing is the problem. I think you can't. Ooh. I mean, I don't think it makes a lot of sense to go and use if you use a touch device heavily. Like, there are certain events like swipe events, stuff like that, you can't do with a mouse. Those don't track one to one.
Sure.
And so I think in that sense, it's confusing.
People use the iPod keyboard dock all the time.
Oh, I use it all the time too. I'm not talking about for typing. I'm saying the fact that it has like
– Right. But so I mean, you can still touch the screen. It doesn't lock out the touching.
Well, I think they should. I mean, having the mouse there, I think, is actually a strike against the product is what I'm trying to say.
They want to go and give it
to be like, okay, cool. It's just like this because it would be like a full-featured laptop. That's the pitch, you know? But I think in terms of actually using the device, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. I think they should go and
–
They should just have
so
the keyboard
know.
And not have the mouse.
But, you know, it had some cool – I mean, the extended battery life, the way it snapped in.
Yeah.
I thought –
Well, have you ever used the iPhone iOS emulator for running apps and stuff?
No.
It's the same kind of thing where you can basically have like it running on your Mac and then kind of use the mouse to simulate the touch thing.
I've used that.
But then, it gets so convoluted trying to go and like say what is a what's a touch and what's not and what's just moving the thing. And
but that's pretty much. I mean,
yeah. So basically, you pointed out about how you thought it was going to go and be similar to what happened within the phone market, the tablet market.
Yes.
I disagree with this 100%. I think, there's a couple different like varying thoughts out there in the world. It's basically there's two thoughts that the tablets will go the way of the Android phone market, and also B, that this is just going to be like Apple versus Windows, actually, with Android playing the role of Windows. And on the first point, the phone market. There are a lot of people, and myself included, earlier on, and I was wrong, said that basically I think iOS is gold and Android can't do anything, blah, 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 blah. And what I didn't recognize in that scenario was the role of basically just the carriers and like commoditized hardware. And that's the difference here. Like in the phone market, everybody needs a phone.
These hardware vendors were not going to roll over.
Oh, yeah. But everybody needs a phone, basically. Like that's a built-in need that everybody has. And people have already been trained for the last, 15, 20 years of the cell phone industry to go and get whatever device is available. They differentiate it based off whatever gimmick feature they can be on it. And that's how people are trained to use it.
Totally.
Apple, when iOS came out and they were like, in bed with AT&T, they did a lot of stuff to kind of like break that up. Android's kind of moved that back again and put a lot of power back in the hands of the carriers. But I think if it becomes like strictly just like, you want the cheapest thing, or there's like, a buy one, get one free and that kind of stuff. You have these commoditized devices like that everybody needs. I think that's why Android gets a big, big edge, because it's if you can spend $99 for two phones, you're going to go and, you'll probably do that if you don't care.
Totally.
Or like especially before the Verizon iPhone, if you have no choice.
Right.
So I think there's a big – I think it's a different market than either PCs were or tablets are now. I think the phone market. I think the tablet market is going to be much more like the PC market in terms of basically saying people are going to buy what – they're going to buy – they don't need these devices. There's not an inherent need for it. It's once again, they already have computers already.
I agree.
So it's going to have to be something that adds extra utility, and they're going to buy something if it enhances, their computing experience or gives them, improves the way they do stuff.
Here's the market I see, and it's already been affected in the sales of this market.
Mm-hmm.
The netbook, I think, is going to pretty much eliminate – I mean the tablet is going to pretty much eliminate the netbook.
Oh, sure.
I think that's the market. Because netbooks were the same thing. You didn't really need one. It wasn't to replace your current laptop.
Oh, I think these are much bigger than netbooks everywhere.
Oh, I agree. But I think they're taking that space over. They have taken
it's already gone.
Yeah. Okay. So the reason those netbooks became so popular and the reason a company like Asus came out of the gate really strong is because they offered a quality product and they undercut everybody in their price. So when the first tablet comes out that's $200 less than an iPad, I don't care what it is, that thing's going to sell like hotcakes.
Here's why I disagree.
It's going
to. There's a netbooks and regular PCs are different than tablets in one very specific way. A broad, you know, varied ecosystem of hardware in the PC market and netbooks to a lesser degree was very, very important and easy to do. Basically, if you wanted a bigger monitor, that's fine. If you wanted a bigger hard drive, that's fine. Faster, slower processor, all that is fine.
Not on the netbooks.
But go hold with me for a second. And all that was fine because basically the UI, the interface, the way you worked with the computer was always the same across all these. You had a mouse and you had a keyboard. Now, maybe you'd have like a little trackpad instead of a mouse if it was a laptop. Or maybe you had like a little button like the ThinkPads used to have and that kind of stuff. But ultimately, you were always interacting with the device with the same tools. And that had been that way since 84, 85 or Windows 3.1 came out and it went turbo. The difference here is that these devices, because they are touch devices, the way you interact with them basically is all about the software. And the software is dictated to by the hardware. Basically, that hardware is.
It's only dictated that way because of Apple.
Well, I'm talking
about the other ones, it's not.
Well, and that's the problem. I think in terms of
size
and form
factor.
That's
the problem
with
just computers.
No, I'm not, because it's different. Because computers, you're always – the way you interact with the machine is always the same two devices. With touch devices, you're actually interacting with the actual thing itself. So the screen size, the feel of the device, the weight of the device, and the software, those things are determining how you interact with it. And that's a huge difference. And those things make it a very, very different market, I think, in the long term.
But it's not going to be just iOS versus Android.
Oh, no. It's going to
be iOS. Well, that's the thing.
Of course.
And this market is proving to be very successful because of Apple. And I think you're going to see a lot of innovation. You're going to see major price wars. You're definitely going to see a price war going on. And Apple's not going to jump into that because they don't. They don't in the laptop market. They don't in the desktop market.
I disagree on that as well. I think they don't.
They don't.
I don't think they're going to be happy. I don't think their goal with this thing, with this market, is going to be to preserve the high end. I think that's been true from the minute they came out iPad.
I would love to see them slash the price when other people come out with the cheaper ones. Because right off the bat, this first Asus coming out is $100 less, for the Wi-Fi only, and that's their first device. I know this company, and you can see how they've worked in the past. I say within a year, they're going to have a $300 tablet that's high quality.
Once again, it all depends on the software. Ultimately, depends on the software.
I love the iPad. I think it's very cool.
Yeah.
I will not buy one right now.
Sure.
For one reason.
Flash?
Price.
Price?
No, not flash. It's too expensive. I don't need something that expensive for that use.
Fair enough.
$300 to me is the magic price point.
Fair enough.
And as soon as there's a tablet at $300, I'm going to buy it, and I know I'm not the only one. There are a lot of people that it's just a cost thing. And so we're going to see that, and it's going to drive the innovation for all the other ones, but there's definitely something to be said about the price point.
I definitely agree, and I think obviously all these devices are just going to get cheaper and cheaper as time goes on, no doubt.
If Apple jumps into the price war, there's a certain point. I'm curious to see that because they've never done it.
I think they did it from the beginning with the iPad because everybody thought it was going to be $1,000 or $800. The fact that it was as low as it was at the time, if you remember, last year, it was a huge surprise to everybody. As it stands, most companies aren't competing with the iPad because Apple basically has a stranglehold on the 9.7-inch screen market. Everybody says, oh, no, we think it's a better form factor. Any of the case, nobody can go and actually get the panels cheap enough because Apple kind of has bought them all up.
Right.
Apple has basically did another deal for another bunch of displays. They did the same thing with the flash memory. They're basically, from the supply chain perspective, they've been doing a really, really good job of making sure that they have the economy of scale that nobody else can quite get to yet.
But that will change.
Of course it will. And what I'm saying, I don't think it represents.
You're saying you don't think there's. You're saying people don't want tablets; they want the iPad. That's the gist of what you're saying.
Ultimately, if you break it down, that is correct. I don't know that there is necessarily a desire for tablets because tablets have been around for 10, 15 – and when did the first Microsoft ones come out?
And they've never been successful.
Yeah, because people basically – I don't think people want a flat thing.
They crack the code.
Because once again, I think it's all about the usage. If it can be easier than what you do already, then there's a reason to buy it. If there's not – I don't want to spend $300 just so I can have something if I'm not going to use it. My iPad I use every day.
I think I would use a tablet, but I wouldn't use it – it's not – I don't feel like I'm missing anything by not having a tablet, but I think I would gain from having one, if that makes sense.
I think.
You know what I mean? I'm not in day to day missing usage of it.
Sure.
But if I had one, there's more stuff that I would do just because I want to do it, not because I needed to do it.
Would you do it even if it was harder to use than like your computer you already have? Or on your Mac Mini on your TV or anything?
No, probably not.
And that's,
although, and that's harder and that's, or less. Harder versus convenience. If it's walking into my bedroom and getting on my computer to look something up, or grabbing the tablet off the couch and to look something up, even if it was a little easier to do it on the computer, I'd probably still grab the tablet that's sitting next to me.
You wouldn't use the Mac Mini on your TV?
No, that's difficult to navigate.
Oh, is it?
It's not. I use it often, but it's not the easiest scenario.
Right.
For an everyday user, no. People, someone at home that had that setup would be like, this is really difficult.
Normal people at home wouldn't have that setup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that convenience is a big part of something like a tablet, I feel.
I agree. I think the
and convenience and ease of use aren't necessarily tied together. They're closely tied together.
Correct.
But they're not completely tied together.
Well, my thing is if the iPad was harder to use than my laptop, I would just basically go and bring my laptop around the house, which is what I did before. You know, I had my laptop out in the living room, right, where I took it in the bedroom to watch a
movie. A lot of
people
don't have laptops, though. They just have their desktop computers.
But I think a lot of people do. But I mean,
yes.
But once again, we're talking about arguing that people are going to go and buy inferior product just to go and have something that's small with a flat screen. And I don't think that's the case. I think if that was the case, we'd be seeing the Zoom and the Acer Asus and Signio 5000 and
not for $800
playbook. Well, isn't the Zoom's like down to like $400 or $500 now, isn't it?
It's $600, and then contract it's less. It's expensive still.
Contract thing is a terrible idea.
Oh, terrible. Yeah. But that's the thing. Price plays a big part of this, you know. And if you can't – put it this way. If you're going to come out more expensive than the iPad, you lose. You lost.
Oh, sure.
You lost.
Yeah.
No matter what.
It's the only way.
There's no way
because
you
it's taken
that.
As a given that they're not going to go and compete on experience or usability.
You just don't. You don't win that. But you know, obviously – we're obviously differ on this, but I don't feel that not as intuitive means inferior of a product.
I disagree on that. Yeah, completely.
I know. But that's just not how I think of it, you know.
Yeah. Well, to me, once again, it comes to that thing. If it's harder to use, it's a much – off the bat, it's
harder to use at first.
Well, but here's the thing. You already have a product that is easier to use that everybody's played with and knows about. So basically, if you have a product that's harder to use, you're instantly off out of the gate narrowing your potential market. My parents ain't going to get one. My mom's not going to get one. You know, my uncle's not going to get one. You know, all that stuff, that goes out the window right at the top. Basically, people get it because they go, oh, this is easy
and
it's efficient.
I mean, back to the netbook market, and yes, it's different, but those netbooks that came out, a lot of them blew.
Yeah, but they were
slower, they were harder to use, they were bought, and that market exploded because you can get a computer for $200.
Right, but how many people basically used that, loved it, and are going to buy one again?
I think if there was no tablet market, I think that would continue to grow. I think that netbook market was not slowing down.
I think the fact that it was cannibalized that easy by tablets speaks to like an underlying dissatisfaction overall with the experience of
Maybe.
Those products. I think it really
it's
does.
It's possible, but I mean, I got to tell you, those things sold like crazy.
And I'm sure here's
like
the thing.
Crazy.
And a $300 tablet may go and sell great out of the gate. I don't think people are going to rebuy one if it sucks. And also here's another problem with the varying like, you know, different marketplaces. I think that's going to be a huge problem too. Like especially if the Amazon one, if you buy your apps on the Amazon one, then you can't move to a Zoom or you lose all your apps or vice versa.
No, you never lose all your apps.
Yeah, you do. Yes, you do.
You just sign in your Amazon.
No. That's only if you're using the Android marketplace. All these specialized devices that aren't going to have the marketplace on them, like the Nook Color, all those ones, you don't have the marketplace on those. You don't get your apps back.
Oh, you're talking about if it's a device that doesn't have the Android market.
Correct, which is I think where it's going to go ultimately because that's more interesting for – I think
you could always –
that's a better proposition for all these people that are opening their own app stores and all that kind of stuff.
But you can – listen, that's a whole another argument that we don't
Definitely.
Have time for, but I'm all for multiple stores to buy things no matter what it is, physical or on the devices. Having one lockdown store, I hate.
I agree. I think the only way that either one should work should be device-wide. I think that I don't like basically Amazon having their special app store. Like, I think having it be platform-centric is fine. It makes sense because you know as a user, if you buy an app for your Mac, it can only run on a Mac. If you buy an app for Windows, it only runs in Windows. If you buy an app for iOS, it only runs in iOS.
Right.
Same for Android. I think the fragmentation in app markets is scary. And also, I don't know how this can affect developers. Who do you develop for? Like, it's so complex. It makes it a very complex ecosystem, but that's another conversation.
Yeah, totally.
One thing to wrap up on the tablet thing I wanted to get to, and one question that nobody's really kind of asking yet, other than, ooh, Apple's making money at it, why are any of these companies actually making tablets? What do they have to offer? Like, why ultimately is RIM making a tablet?
Well, unfortunately, I don't know because I still don't really understand why someone needs a tablet.
Yeah. But no, but it's, once again, like, why do people
– I don't know.
Why do, what do they have to offer that is a
– People seem to like it.
Yeah. But no, I'm saying why is RIM making a tablet other than making money? What do they say? Like, we have a great thing to do. We have a great thing here that we can offer people that they'll enjoy. What is their approach? I think RIM, for example, it's purely a defensive measure. They're trying to go and stop the loss of BlackBerry sales by selling a tablet device, trying to capitalize on the tablet craze, which I think they think is a fad, to be honest, and hoping people will go and stay with their BlackBerries because they have to use that.
They definitely are doing that.
Which makes no sense.
100%.
And it's no – I mean, once again, we're not going to rip on them as a company, but they just lowered their guidance and their stock is tanking and like they sold less units than they thought this last season.
They make no sense.
Honestly, I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised if they're gone in 3 years. Like, I think they are heavily tanking and they're not going to – they don't know how to sell
it. Maybe somebody's going to buy them and revamp
them. I think that's what happened.
I don't know. I mean, and they have this – I'm going to rant on them for one quick second because they have this – their big conference coming up or whatever, right?
Right.
And they have this new QNX software that they're using on the playbooks.
Right.
So what are they releasing for their new product lineup? One device that's not running that OS.
But they are rebranding 6.1 as 7 to make it sound fancier, which is really good. Which is fantastic.
Welcome to the loony bin,
yeah.
RIM. You've been here for a while.
Yeah. Well, all right, guys, I know this is a long show today, to be expected.
Okay, but we're running long. Yeah, we're talking about good stuff.
Exactly. But I want to go back to the idea of what people can go and contribute in terms of the tablet space, because I think all these other companies, and this really struck me after I was using it yesterday, I feel like all these companies, you know, RIM and Motorola and Acer, Asus in Bruglio 5000 – whatever. They're all releasing these devices as disposable devices, it seemed to me. Much like – and phones are like that to a certain degree. And the difference here, I think, is that these are not one-off disposable devices. I think these are ultimately computing platforms that need to be built. These are the next-gen computing platforms.
I agree with that.
And that to me is what really, really stood out, because you have – once again, I'm going to hold up Apple, but they did crack the market. And I think, and their strategy is the smart strategy. They're not just basically releasing a tablet. They're releasing – they're kind of building a complete ecosystem, you know, with applications and all this stuff. And basically it's what eventually is going to be running all Apple computers, I think, down the line. At one point, you know, the touch device will be
– convergence.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what all these other things are missing, I think. It's not just about releasing one device to get somebody to buy it. It's to go and release a new computer. If I go and love my Mac and buy applications on my Mac, I'm going to go and probably stick with Mac products for the most part, because I get used to that. I like it and all these kind of things.
Right.
All these other places, they're releasing devices to sell a piece of hardware, because ultimately it's different than it was with Windows, where you basically had an already dominant OS and people could just go and sell commoditized hardware for it. Right now, the OS's, their stance is still being built. You know what I mean? So it's a different situation. And it's all these companies, in a way, I feel like they're not helping. Whatever this next generation OS is, they're not helping. And I think ultimately I'm curious to see how much Google decides to lock down requirements for hardware and that kind of stuff coming forward. Because I think Microsoft has done that with the Nokia partnership. They've been pretty specific about, you know, UI buttons and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's going to give them a big leg up in terms of consistency with those phones. So I think ultimately consumers want to be able to go and sit down with the phone. And if you have a gist of how like a certain phone works, a certain OS, you're fine with it. Like you know Windows well enough, you can use it on any computer. Apple, the same thing. Same with iOS. All the different flavors of Android at this point, it causes problems with that. There's basic things, but it does differ. And I think the tablet thing, because it actually is a new computing platform, not a disposable device, that's even more important.
Well, I'm curious to see how a company – what happens with a company like HP.
Yeah.
Because HP is a hardware developer and they're also making the software.
Correct.
So it's similar to an Apple situation. I don't think you're going to see web OS software on other than HP devices.
No, and they're talking about releasing it on desktops too.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah.
And I mean, the biggest thing, and like you said, you know, you can see Microsoft becoming number two. I'm very, very curious to see their approach to this.
Yeah. Well, I think
if they do it like they do Windows, and which is something Android's missing with the way they release things. Like when you release an update for Windows, it doesn't mean you can't use the programs for every other – I mean, it's like – there's
right.
some major flaws in the way right. Android releases updates.
Well, once again, it's a matter too of like what they see to the carriers. I think their tablets could be different, but I think the phone devices, unless they're in control, I think it's always going to be like that.
Yeah, and so once they come out with their tablet computing, which seems like they're doing some similar thing as Apple with converging like Windows 8 to a tablet/desktop right. thing. Those two things I'm very curious to see more than how Android is developing.
Right. I think what can give them the biggest, you know, leg up is they – because they haven't kind of really set a name for themselves in terms of
HP, you mean?
No, I'm talking about, I was talking about Microsoft actually. Yeah. I'll get to HP's next. Because they haven't basically set a paradigm of how they're doing it, they can go and, you know, enact, you know, strict hardware requirements for their partners. They can basically say, because they've got no key in their pocket, they can basically say, you have to go and do this certain things and provide a consistent experience. Because that's the first thing that stood out with the Zoom for me. The fact that I couldn't go, like, I know Android phones and obviously Honeycomb is a completely different thing, but even within it, I couldn't even figure out how to go back and forth between like that app screen. I don't know why it bugged me. It was like, you know, that upper, there's that plus sign on the upper top where you press it and it brings up your full thing of apps.
Yeah.
I was okay, cool. I was done with it. I went up to the upper right, same place to close it. And there's no button. You have to hit that home button to get it. Right. I'm like, that is, to me, that's like, at that point, it's like you're out. And it's like, there needs to be strict requirements so they're all consistent across the board. I think Microsoft Hack can do that. I think HP can do that, obviously, because they're doing it all in-house. The difference is, I think, the only two players in this market that have ever developed successful OSs, full-featured OSs, are Apple and Microsoft. And right now, absolutely, this isn't a hardware game. This is a software game. This is an operating system game.
I think it's an all-encompassing game. I don't think it's – I think the hardware these days is going to end up being on par for each other. But I think it's the whole package, and it's kind of to what you were saying. I don't think it's just the software or just the hardware. I think it's the device.
Well, I think
in full.
I think they interact with each other to such a degree, which is completely – which is a totally new thing. We've really never seen that before.
No.
Yeah. And I think which I think rigorous standards are really important. And I also think, you know, a well-thought-out, consistent, you know, UI is imperative. I mean, I think that's like – it comes down to that, because that basically is the only way you can get into your device.
Totally.
So I think it really comes down to that. So it's really interesting to me. All these people are obviously jumping into it because they want the money, but none of them really have an experience of, like, you know, doing this, of building that kind of system, you know, not even Google, to be honest.
No.
You know, so like, I'm very curious, without the leg up of the carriers and that kind of whole specialized situation, I'm very curious to see how it goes, because I think ultimately the whole idea of, you know, Android being the new Windows and stuff, I think is flawed in that regard, because this is not.
And they haven't been as smart as Windows with how they release software or anything like that.
Yeah. I think the notion of just allowing everybody to go and make stuff, whatever they want, ultimately is not good. It's fine in phones because it's a very specific market. I think it's not going to be okay for tablets. I think they're going to have to be much more militant. They've started to lock it down already. But I think it's for them to succeed, they're going to have to be a lot better about that. And I think they're honestly going to have to be a lot better in terms of design. Like, I think it can't be like
– Well, and we're going to see that with – I mean, as an aside, Sony, you know, release specs. They're very, you know, far in the future. But for two tablets, I mean, you get a company like Sony getting in the game you're getting major design innovation with those guys.
And I think hardware specs ultimately are irrelevant. I really think it's a matter of, it's going to be
people. That hasn't been the case for Sony in the past.
But
people buy and pay a lot
for Sony's products because
of their aesthetic.
But I'm talking – well, Sony aesthetics and build quality have not been very good for
I agree,
8 years or so. But
in general.
But I'm saying, once again, tablets, the way you interact with the device, you know, is A, the software, and, you know, B, how the hardware, you know, configuration, you know, mostly screen and, like, you know, feel, you know, affects that. And I think, once again, you know, the only way they can go and improve it is to put their complete new skin on it. If they want to go and develop like a great skin for software and make that, that's fine. But they have no history in developing that kind of thing. They have interest. They're making great laptops and hardware. But they don't have any history of, like, you know, developing a great thing. And once again, it's all about ultimately the underlying OS. I don't think that Honeycomb or, like, you know, I think Android at its core, to be competitive, is going to have to go and completely rethink itself. I don't think you can just put a skin on top of it.
I think you can, because you can skin that thing so it's completely different cat.
But once again, that's the problem.
And it's not just skinning.
But and here's why it's a problem, though, because then
when Amazon comes up with their tablet, it's going to be their own interface.
Oh, of course.
And it's going to.
And I think Amazon has the best.
Just because Android's running in as the backbone doesn't mean that it's a bad device.
Right. I think it's. I think Amazon is going to have the best, you know, price and value proposition of any of these, by the way, which we kind of talked about last week.
Well, I mean, and look at the Nook. Look at the Nook.
Yeah.
That's a completely customized interface. And I think it's doing great. People love it.
I think the end game for Android is that it's not going to be an OS in the traditional sense. I think it's going to be – and remember, we talked about this.
It's going to be a
platform. The first time –
That's what it should be.
It's not going to be a platform. I think it's going to be –
It should be a platform.
It's going to be something
that you develop on.
Yeah. It's going to be, I think, the – it's going to be like Linux. You know, and we had this conversation, remember, like two, 3 years ago.
Linux. But it's Unix.
But not in that, not specifically. I'm saying when people compare OS, they go, oh, it's iOS versus Android. I don't think that's the real comparison. I think it's going to be iOS versus Amazon OS versus Sony OS versus flavor. You know what I mean?
That's what Mac OS is. That's what Linux is. They're all flavors of Unix.
Yeah, but I'm talking about in terms of people right now are comparing all Android devices.
Oh, I know what they're doing. And that's incorrect. They branded that way.
But I don't think ultimately I don't think that's going to be the way it's going to play out. I think it's going to be the specific device-specific experiences. And I think – and that becomes a problem because then you're basically
– And I think that's what I think you're right. And I think that's what the Nook is a prime example of.
Yeah, totally.
That's a prime – that thing is – you would never look at that and go, this is an Android device.
Right. And the problem with it – and here's the one – I mean, I'm going to circle back around. The problem with that is then it runs into that whole App Store situation we talked about. Because if you're going to go and make your complete customized own thing, and you can go and – like if you're coming like Amazon or like, you know, was it Barnes & Noble? That's the Nook?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can make your own app store and that kind of stuff. That's what you're going to have on there. And you're not going to worry about Google sanctioning it and having all the authentic Google stuff. You're going to do your own thing because sure. That's the power of having that open Linux, you know, Linux thing. Like my cable box used to run Linux, right?
Right.
You know, I didn't have any like, you know, any Linux-related applications I could get to. But at that point, it becomes – I think it becomes hard for them to go and be broadly accepted because they're going to become super, super niche devices in terms of apps, you know, well, which is one thing we've never really talked about.
I mean, apps are, you know, just like a computer, you know. I mean, you buy an app. You install it on your computer. You can't – I mean, unless you have the disk or whatever – or usually even if you have the disk in the code, you can't install it on your next device.
But once again, all these things become hyper-fragmented because it's going to be – you buy apps. It's going to lock you into the Nook platform.
What would you just like the iPhone. You buy apps. You're locked in the iPhone platform, period.
Right. But iOS is a much broader platform than I think a specific –
that's it. No matter what, you will never put those apps on any other device but an Apple device.
Correct.
I don't think that's how it should be.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be out. I mean,
of course, that's the way it's always been. Why would that? Why should any app work on any other operating system?
Well, I guess it shouldn't work.
That makes no sense.
It shouldn't work on any other operating system, I guess. But it should work on another.
Well, I guess that's just common sense. I think, don't you think?
Well, yes.
I mean, in a perfect world, it'd be nice if everything would run anything, and I bought a record that I could then play as a CD. But
yes, I do agree on that front. But I don't agree that there should only be one app store.
Why should there be more app stores?
Why should there be Best Buy, Target, and Walmart?
I don't think it's analogous.
What do you mean? So Apple, why not? Because they completely control their app store. They have the one market where you can buy things from. There's no other store.
Right.
Why is that right?
For consistency.
Completely anti-competitive.
Consistency, security.
So that's like saying if you wanted to buy Mac OS Snow Leopard that you can only buy it from the Apple store and you can't go to Amazon and buy it.
They could do that. Why not?
They could.
Why would that be a problem?
Wow.
No, I'm serious. Like, here's the thing.
Why have stores that sell the same thing in general at all?
Well, all kinds of people have exclusive things. Like, I don't understand why if they wanted to sell their stuff,
talking about completely exclusive.
Well, they're selling, you know, new OSs I'm sure are going to be sold only through the Mac App Store.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, I mean,
so if I'm a developer and I develop software
right.
for Apple,
sure,
I can only sell it through Apple Store and give them a cut?
Through the App Store?
I can't sell it myself?
Through the Mac App Store?
Yeah.
Oh,
I can't
sell
it myself?
You can sell stuff for yourself.
Why? How? How would they get it on the device?
On the Mac or an iOS device?
Well, it looks like it's going that way for the Mac, but I'm talking about iOS.
Mac's never going to be
locked down. I'm talking about iOS.
You can't.
Right. So why is that okay on the iOS but not okay – you know, for a computer or for anything else?
Well, first of all, computers are a different breed in general. The devices themselves are inherently different.
But just conceptually, why is that okay?
I don't
that you can only buy stuff from one store.
Why is that not okay?
Because there's no competitiveness.
Well, then don't buy
that. They can do anything they want.
Correct. Why is that a problem?
Well, like I said,
if you don't want to develop for that device, then you don't buy into that ecosystem. I don't see where that's an issue. If there's software that's Windows that I really want to run, then I don't buy a Mac. I buy a Windows machine.
Right. But you're saying I can't develop for your device unless I sell it in your store.
Right.
Okay. So why can't I make a movie if I can only show it in your movie theater?
I think you're conflating different markets.
No.
Basically,
absolutely not.
If I want to go, if Amazon only sold the Kindle through Amazon themselves like they did for a long time, would that be wrong?
That would – I guess, yeah.
That'd be wrong.
I guess.
Yeah, I see no problem with that. I see no problem with Apple selling their products only. They don't have to sell through Amazon.
But that's
to
also different. That's different because
but that's
Amazon.
You're comparing physical goods.
Amazon makes the Kindle and sells it. Apple can make their products and sell it only through their store. Fine. Third party person that makes something should be able to sell it in any store they want. That's totally different. Apple making their OS and making their devices, if they make their own apps that they want to sell in their own store, I think that's fine. So if Kindle makes their own product, if Amazon makes their own product and sells it on Amazon exclusively, fine.
Can you buy Kindle apps on different devices or only through Amazon?
Are there Kindle apps?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
If it's only available on Amazon,
I think that's a bad idea.
I disagree. I think especially in software platforms, when you have basically the main, most important things are in terms of like, you know, consistency and reliability.
So why is that? Why do you think it'll never happen on the Mac then? What's the difference?
I think it's a precedent has been set.
Fine. But so you think that would be okay though?
If I built a
learn to type software and I wanted to for Mac, I developed it for Mac and I wanted to sell it for Mac. And the only way for me to sell it through Mac was to sell it in their store and give them a cut. Mm-hmm. You think that's okay?
Like I said, I think they're different situations and they're different. I don't think so. I think they're different. The problem is like when you're conflating the computer thing has existed in a certain way for 30, 40 years.
I realize that. And yeah. You're saying, but I'm saying if they decided to change it and if there was not going to be.
I think that would not be okay because they're basically people that already make their living on it on the old model. I think there are benefits to the new model.
So you're saying just because the model exists, it's okay, but otherwise it wouldn't. It would be different.
If they released a brand new device, let's say they re-release the Lisa, the release of four.
I'm not talking about something that Apple makes. Something that a company makes has every right to sell it only to themselves.
If they released a brand new style of desktop computer, mm-hmm. and the only way you could get apps, you know, outside apps onto it was through the App Store, I wouldn't have a problem with that. No.
Wow. Okay. I philosophically completely disagree on that.
Okay. Yeah. I don't see what, because what's the competition that's not being had?
There's a difference between making an exclusivity deal with somebody.
But here's the thing. Developers set their own prices. There's no competition to be had. Like, that's what I understand the point of what you're saying. Like, competition is usually because I can get something cheaper or faster or better. But it's the same. It's the software. The developers set the price.
Well, what if I open a store that only charges 1%?
That's fair.
I mean, why not?
That's fair.
Or I charge no percent and I make money on advertising. I mean, why is that not – why – that should be available. I understand that they want to keep the ecosystem closed because they want to keep control over what apps go on their phone.
Sure.
I get why they do it, but I just don't think it's right.
See, I don't have – I guess I see – I understand how, like you're saying, in terms of examples of different things you could do. I get that in terms of like, you know, offering different app stores and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't have moral issues with what they have, with what the current situation is, though. Like, if a certain company only sold a piece, you know, a certain food through Whole Foods.
But that's their choice. If there were only Whole Foods,
that's fair.
That's what I'm saying.
But here's the benefit, though, what we were talking about before. Here's why I appreciate it. I know that as long as my iOS device works, that Apple store and all the apps in it are always going to be available. Sure. If I buy from a third party, I don't have that guarantee.
That absolutely. You know?
And I think the problem that I have with what I was talking about earlier with like third party app stores, if I go and buy a Nook Color tablet and I know that runs Android and the only app store I have is like the Barnes & Noble store and I spend $300 on apps, which would be hard on Android because they're on a lot of apps, you know, on the tablet stuff and they're usually cheap. They're free or, you know, ad-based anyway. Right. Let's say I spend $300. And then I go like, man, I want to upgrade to a bigger one. So I go and upgrade to the Amazon tablet or I upgrade to like the Zoom. I lose – that $300 is gone. That to me is a problem.
That is true. And I think that is a problem.
That's why I think app stores tied to the OS, especially in this kind of thing, I think that's what drives the growth of app sales because it's secure, because it's reliable and you know it's always going
to
be there.
But I don't mind it tied to the OS as long as everybody can have the app store.
Everybody can have the app store.
Everybody can have different app stores.
I see. And I think that gets into problems because then it's not tied to the OS. Apple's not going to support 5 billion different app stores. They're going to support own.
They support 5 billion different physical stores for software.
But they're all
computers.
Their stores. They're not going to go
and
provide.
I'm talking about Best Buy and Target and Walmart and everybody that sells Macintosh software.
They ship product. I mean, if you're talking about for them to support it, like let's say Joe opens an app store for like, you know, Joe's iOS app store and like he shows tons of ads and the apps are all free. And let's say they all cost $1, you know, and like 30% off.
Right.
Now, I guess apparently he's not going to be jerking off the developers and he's going to go and pay them out of his pocket and somehow still make a profit. It doesn't make sense, but let's say he does that, right?
Maybe, maybe not.
Then what happens if Joe goes out of business? And all those apps are then gone for all those people.
Well, that's what I think. I think the implementation where they're locked to the app store doesn't work.
Well, then,
they should be.
So then what? Then the developers have to do it? Like, that's the utility.
They're locked on the device.
Then what if you get a new device?
Then you should be able to transfer it to a new device, just like you transfer software.
What if that new app store is gone? What if that app store is exclusive to certain devices?
I think it should just be a store and not an app management system.
I feel like that's
what I'm saying. Because what you're talking about,
Who's going to be backing up the things, the apps? Who's going to go and have those?
The OS.
Why?
The OS, not that you're separating the app store from the OS.
So let's say you go and you buy stuff from Joe's, you know, compute from Joe's app store, right?
Right.
And you get a brand new device,
right?
You know, and you want to go and move them. You know, and the new device, because it's not, you know, like it's not Joe OS. It's like, you know, it's Amazon. It's Zoom OS, right? It's like, you know, Motorola's flavor, just a straight Android, right?
Okay.
You can't – then those apps are gone.
Why are those apps gone if I go transfer device to device?
Because that app store doesn't then work on the new thing.
It doesn't matter about the app store. It doesn't matter about the delivery device. It matters about the app itself. So if the apps are on my phone and I go into – let's say like BlackBerry does, which is one thing they do great, is they have a transfer device feature, which also Apple does too. So let's say I say I got a new device, transfer all my apps from this device to this device, not through the app store.
And what happens if your computer goes down?
Well, what happens if your computer – what happens if your – I mean, you're saying obviously storing stuff in the cloud. That's a whole
– I'm saying basically that if all my apps get lost, my computer crashes and my device gets wiped, I re-download them all.
Well, luckily that's what Apple allows you to do, but it's not the same with like music or anything else.
Well, that doesn't go for music because of the, you know, because the label's restrictions. I mean, we assume.
But
once again, Joe's, you know, what if I lose my backup and then
because,
Joe's
okay, app store
and Joe's and let's say I change devices and my backup is gone. Then what do I do? And I've lost $300. Yes.
Yes. Absolutely.
That's ridiculous.
Like anything else.
That's ridiculous.
What do you mean that's ridiculous?
Because so in the name of
that's
competition,
normal.
I lose $300. It's not normal. The norm is basically you
norm
have like –
norm is not that it's stored in the cloud and that you get to always keep it. That's not the norm. That's new. And it's great, but it's new.
The norm, I think,
and also,
in these devices –
You know what?
I think we should be taking steps forward, not take steps backwards to justify it.
The way Google is backing everything up in the cloud, they could easily say, you know, back up my apps.
Right. You're arguing
not in the app store. So you get a new device, back up my apps.
You're looking for a band-aid solution to an underlying problem with your initial suggestion that I don't think plays. I think basically
I'm saying the apps should not be tied to the store.
We're not talking about that. We're talking.
But you're saying what if the store closes? I'm saying they should be stored on your device just like everything else.
And let's say you lose that.
What if you
and
lose
you,
the
then
disk
then
of
you
the
can't
program
get the,
you bought?
We're not talking about the 1990s, dude.
But
it's 2011.
Things can get
lost.
Don't
take a step backwards.
Things can always get lost, no matter what. At the end of the day, things can always get lost.
And that's why this is better than what you're suggesting.
Okay. In the form of better by meaning you have no competition.
No, better than like I know I always have my apps. I know they're always secure. I know I can always get backups.
By
I know they're always going to be there.
By losing competition.
Basically, you're arguing for competition for basically
– for competition's sake. Absolutely. 100%.
Ridiculous. User interface, user experience, always better.
Oh, wow.
If competition, because here's the problem.
So you're saying there should be no competition?
I'm not saying there should be no competition.
Yes, you are. You're saying there should be only to buy from one person.
I'm saying I have no moral problems with what this situation is. I think it's superior for the consumer.
Okay.
Great. I've yet to hear one reason why what you're suggesting is a better
experience for anybody. There's only one reason. Competition.
I don't believe in moral absolutes. I want what's best for my device. I want what the best usage is.
Best for the market.
I think this is best for the market because everybody's
having
going
only
competing.
One store is never best for the market.
You're conflating stuff. Like once again, what market are you talking about? You said it's because it's not good for the
general,
market. What market?
In general.
No, specifically what market?
Everybody. Everybody.
So who's it bad for?
It's bad for the guy that wants to release a piece of software that Apple decides that they can't.
I agree. That sucks.
Okay.
I agree.
So if there was another app store, then they would be able to release it. Or they'd be able to release it on their own with a delivery device through the internet.
Or you can jailbreak it and sideload his app. You can do that.
Except that's against Apple's user agreement.
But whatever.
But it is.
I mean, yeah, but whatever.
But that's my point.
My point is like those solutions exist.
So what's not – let's say it's not an app store. Let's say it's just that the developer can sell it on their own website. You would be against that?
They can if they want to.
No, they cannot.
You have to jailbreak your device, but you can get it on there.
Jailbreaking the devices is illegal based on your contract with Apple. You can roll your eyes all you want. It's true.
I'm saying,
and they're not going to come down on anybody, but it's true, and that's what it is.
That is true. Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So I think you should be able to sell your software however you want. You shouldn't have to sell it through Apple, and you shouldn't have to give them a cut. Period. You shouldn't have to give them a cut. And you shouldn't have them be able to decide what is appropriate and what's not appropriate.
In a perfect world, I do agree. In terms of like in total, in a perfect utopian world, I agree. I think the reality is that there are enormous benefits for users, which is really – this is all about consumers. But I think are far and away the restrictions that they put into place and the way they go and handle their app store is what's given it a huge leg up and been great for consumers. It's made billions of dollars for developers. It's been thriving and booming. It's helping drive their platform forward. There's the success of the iOS app store in terms of the quality of apps and the engagement with consumers with those apps is far and away the best of any in the industry. It's reset the bar for what an app store should be.
I think all of that is directly tied to how they go and deal with that.
I think that's part of the overall experience.
I agree, but they could still do all of that and allow you to download an app from someone's website.
I disagree.
How does that change their app store at all or their ecosystem at all?
Because guess what? Because all it takes is one person to go and download it from somebody else and have a bad experience, have it not supported, can't get it back, one thing, and then they bitch and it's all on Apple. And that's how people are, and
That happens with everything.
It doesn't happen with iPhones. That's the point.
It happens with Macintosh.
Exactly. But it doesn't happen with iPhones.
Computers.
Exactly. It doesn't happen with iPhones.
Oh, okay. But it does not happen with iPhones, but unfortunately, you're screwed.
You're not screwed.
Yeah.
How are you screwed?
Because I have to give money to Apple in order to sell my app. Period.
No. You're giving money to Apple to go and cover like bandwidth, overhead, storage, and promotion costs.
But what if I want to provide all that myself?
Then you can't.
No, you can't.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So question for you.
Do you think you would go and get a broader audience for your app selling it on your website or selling it through the App Store?
You would probably get a broader audience through the App Store, but you might make more money selling it by yourself.
Disagree completely.
I couldn't tell you. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I have like I said, in a perfect world, I think we agree. Ultimately, in this thing, choices always have to be made in terms of like how you implement devices, how things are put together, that kind of stuff. And I think there are benefits in this scenario that so far outweigh any, you know, conceptual,
free market.
come off of it. Come on.
But there's not. There's not. In this scenario, there is not.
We could transition into a whole like capitalism conversation. It'll be much longer, a different podcast. We can go into politics in a different day.
You know, that's one store that controls what you can and can't have and charges you for it. Take away that it's Apple. Just think about what I just said.
Charges what? Developers for it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like I said, if they were providing no service, then I would have a problem with it. The fact that they go
But you don't have a choice.
You don't have a choice.
That's my problem.
And I think that's the but I think that particular reason why it's one solution and one elegant, well-defined solution is why it's successful.
And I agree. That is part of why it's successful.
And I think if you basically had an open app store like you're talking about or mini app stores. Then I think you'd have the exact situation you have on Android, which is nobody's making money selling apps. Maybe they get stuff through advertising, but the quality of apps overall is – there's tons. But it's accepted that the overall quality is not that great and people are not making
– Aside from the built-in stuff, I'm going to find it hard-pressed for you to show me things on your iPhone that I can't do on my Android device.
My point is developers are making money on iPhones and they're not making as much money on Android devices. And part of that is the success of the store. And the rules that you think are so evil and nefarious are what make it a trusted source for consumers.
No, I think there should be restrictions on the store, but made by the store's owner, but there should be multiple stores. And there should be other ways to purchase software.
We shall agree to disagree.
Okay. We're going to move on to better things and tastier things.
And we are running really, really long.
Hey, it happens, man.
How long have we gone?
I don't know.
I got to check.
6 hours.
We're at 120.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about food. And if you're listening to this on the way to the work and it's only 45 minutes, then you'll listen on the way home. So I went to – by the way, Brian and I – that was amazing. And
it was fun.
Brian and I love having these conversations. Yeah. okay. So I went to eat at a new restaurant here in Los Angeles called Raised. It's part of LACMA here, which is the Los Angeles County Museum of Art here in Los Angeles. And they have this new kind of outdoor area. There's this amazing light installation that's outside. And then there's on Friday nights, they have music and people kind of picnic. And there's a new restaurant called Ray's that is part of the Patina Group, which is a very well-known restaurant group out here in Los Angeles. Very high quality food. It's it's cool. So the place is really nice. We sat down. We had a waiter come up and give us this whole explanation of the place, and they're part of Patina Group, but they strive for better service, and the food is excellent. And here's your choices. So they offered for water. They offered their own filtered water, which was interesting. For a dollar a person, you can choose to get flat or sparkling water, which I thought was interesting.
They charge for the water.
Does
the water taste like strawberries?
No, it does not. If it tasted like strawberries, I probably wouldn't have been as upset paying for it. But they have their own filtration system, and then they charge you for water. So you're not paying for bottles that were bought.
You're subsidizing their
recycled
filtration.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's kitchen equipment. I don't want to have to pay to use the special oven to cook my food. Yeah. So I have to pay for the special faucet to get my water.
Apparently.
I mean, it was only a dollar a person and it was fine, but it bothered me just a little bit.
Right.
Just enough to get on my nerves. So we ordered some appetizers. There was this awesome stuffed chili with chorizo and cheese inside of it.
That sounds good.
Which was – oh, my! It was amazing. It was just perfectly cooked, and the spicy was just excellent. We had there was an octopus dish, which was really good, and there was this really spicy fire chili. These are the appetizers. Mm-hmm. And the chili was – you took a bite and you felt like you tasted the flavor. And with the best spicy dishes, you taste the flavor first.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden it slowly gets the heat. And that's what it did with this dish. It was so good. It was perfect because it was – I like spicy food. And
definitely.
It was spicy and it hit you. But it didn't completely overwhelm. And
right.
It slowly crept up on
you. And that's the worst when you get something that's super, super spicy and it just hits you and it burns out your taste buds
at the top. Yeah, and that's all you taste
is
spice.
That's all you get, yeah. Definitely.
It's terrible. So this, these were the appetizers. They were great. For the dinner, they had sausages, homemade sausages, mm-hmm. and this really cool, sauce on the side of it. I can't remember exactly what was in it, but it was a very rich sauce. You would cut up the sausages, dip it in the sauce. And a friend of mine had the hanger steak, which was cooked to perfection. Food-wise, the place was phenomenal. The food was top, top quality. Service-wise, was not the best. We had this waiter who came up and gave us this whole spiel about the service and the quality and the excellent and the blah, 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 blah.
Well, if they tell you how good they are, that means they're good, right?
A half hour later, we got our first appetizers.
How long did it take you to get the fancy water?
The water came pretty fast, but they weren't refilling it all that quickly.
Well,
that was part of their pitch.
That was to be nice because you don't want to spend a dollar for it.
That was their part of their pitch. If you buy the flat water at other places, you have to ration out how much you're going to drink. But here, we just keep refilling it.
Yeah, because
it's your own water.
That's funny because I get the flat water, this very, very special fancy tap water at restaurants. That's free. It has free refills. It is bottled by a company called Tap.
And it's called Free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called Free Tap Water. Although it is Los Angeles, maybe the tap water is not a good idea.
That's true.
Actually,
maybe it's part of the kitchen equipment. You don't have to charge a dollar.
Do they wash all the food in the fancy water? And do they actually cleaning surcharge?
But then they should charge you a dollar surcharge.
You have the food and plus a dollar after every food item.
The only thing I could relate it to was we're going to charge you extra to cook in the special, oven or on the special stove. It just doesn't make sense. It's kitchen equipment. It's part of the place. It doesn't cost them any money after that.
It's kind of overhead, people.
But the service was lacking. It took a half hour to get our appetizers. We didn't get our food until an hour after we ordered. And our waiter kept pretty much avoiding us. Where the guy's mm-hmm. Walking around doing other things. And then you see him doing something and you're staring him down. And then he looks over just to check. And you catch eye contact and he totally looks away. when you're staring at a pretty girl and she catches you. That totally happened with the waiter.
The waiter was a pretty girl?
No, he was not
okay.
A pretty girl. So anyway, all in all, amazing food. And they've only been open for a month, so I give them a little slack as far as the service goes. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's going to improve. But, food quality, amazing. Definitely a place to try out. It's at LACMA in the courtyard on Wilshire and what is LACMA over there? Fairfax?
Yeah.
So Wilshire and Fairfax if you're in Los Angeles.
Yeah. If you remember the movie Volcano, that is where they put up all the barriers and turn back the flow of lava the first time. Not when it showed up at Cedars, but the first time. That'll the fire hoses and the fire engines. It was right by there. So I know
exactly.
I know that completely places it for everybody.
So that's my little food review for the week. I know the show went little long, but I hope it was entertaining.
Yeah, and there's actually one point I wanted to circle back around on the competition thing that I
write. That it tastes good?
Tasty competition. we love competition. We love free markets and that kind of stuff, obviously. I think the underlying reason, you know, talking about like why, you know, why the notion of competition doesn't bug me in terms of app stores, I think in terms of place you sell something, if a developer is setting the price and that kind of thing, it doesn't bother me, because what it basically does in the iPhone at least is it sets up a situation where the apps are competing against each other. And the competition is for basically utility, for price, for build quality, for, you know, the how good it's been put together and put, you know.
Absolutely.
And so if you basically want to get a Twitter client, there's like, you know, 15 and like the best ones win, you know. And that's where the competition happens. So I think it's, for me, it doesn't bother me because the competition is happening with the actual product, not in the way somebody's going to go and, you know, and tweak, you know, and like, you know, gimmick up an app store, that kind of thing. And that's personally, I think that's where it should be. And for me, I think if you had multiple app stores, you would diffuse some of that. So I think that's why for me, it's ultimately okay.
I think, and yes, you're paying your fee for the storage.
Developers
are paying their fee.
Yeah. And it's not a fee as much as I think you can consider them overhead charges. I think that's fair. Yes.
No, it's a fee.
But no, because there's actually utility Apple's providing in terms of they're storing stuff, they're streaming stuff.
They are. Yeah. And
it's overhead.
And all the things that you're saying, I would agree if that overhead wasn't there. And I understand that they have to charge it.
Right.
But you don't have a choice to not pay it somewhere else. And that's it.
That's fair. Cool. That's high five, Scott. Woo-hoo! Peaceful ending. We can't really reach that far.
We've separated a little farther.
Yes, we can't really high five. Anyway, thank you everybody for joining us for the longest tech bacon yet. We actually started today going like, oh man, that this is my next podcast show is 1:45. That's ridiculous. And we're now at 1:30. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. But you know, we get excited.
Well, it happens sometimes.
I think we lost the live audience, but hopefully the rest of you will keep listening to this one, and we'll be shorter next week.
I'm Scott.
I'm Brian. Thanks for joining.